Uncle Owen! It's R2 unit has a bad motivator, look!
Having trouble with his droid? His droid?
These two droids. Both are hard working and will serve you well.
Droid! We serve their kind here.
Happy New Year, Chris.
Happy New Year, Scott.
And Happy New Year to all the We Serve Droids listeners. Chris, I hope you've had a pleasant holiday season.
I have. How was yours?
My Christmas was great.
How was your life day?
Life day was always great. We've got the crystals put back in the china cabinet. You know, you only get them out once a year.
Grandpa enjoyed his. Never mind, I don't even want to go back there.
Well, to prevent ourselves from ever talking about the holiday special again, what do you say we get this very special episode where we talk about A New Hope, started with a little game of Crossing the Streams?
Excellent.
All life as you know it, stopping instantaneously.
Human sacrifice!
Every molecule in your body exploding at the speed of light.
Dogs and cats living together!
It would be bad.
Well, Chris, as is our custom, I have the random number generator in front of me to pick which position we'll be filling on our Starship Enterprise. So people who haven't heard this game before, it's a case where Chris and I are slowly fantasy drafting Star Wars characters to fill out positions as if we were staffing the Starship Enterprise. So Chris already has on his ship the Mos Eisley bartender, R2-D2, the Death Star lever guy, Wedge Antilles, Episode 3 Anakin, and Porkins. And I, of course, have K2SO, Nien Num, the Yavin radar gun guy, Jar Jar, the Ewok chief, and Greedo. You ready to go, Chris?
Let's do it.
All right. The random number generator has assigned us the chief engineer position to fill.
That's a good one.
I think that you are up first this time.
All right. I think I'm going to have to go with maybe an obvious choice. Chief engineer, I'm going to have to pick old Chewie. I think if anything, he's probably pretty good at, you know, doing some creative engineering with fixing the Falcon over all these years.
Right, right. I mean, there's a small risk that sometimes this one goes there and that one goes here. The occasional mix-up on that. But he strikes me more as like a Scotty engineer than a Geordi engineer.
Yeah, I feel like he makes up for it with, you know, effort and maybe just pulling things out and, you know, doing some percussive maintenance or just, you know, hitting stuff when needed.
Right. Droids aren't known for pulling isolinear chips out of their sockets. Wookiees have been known to do that. So, I'm stalling for time. I guess if you took Chewbacca and R2 is already off the board, I'm gonna pick another person who can just punch the computer when he needs to, is BB-8.
Oh, nice.
He's, at the beginning of Last Jedi, like, you know, connecting all those circuits or whatever the heck he's doing.
Yeah. The electronic version of, you know, like fingers in the dike kind of thing.
The random number generator has now given us maybe the last, like, really fun one to fill. And that's the next generation Guinan position of bartender. So every ship has to have a bartender, I guess. And so I'm up first now, right?
Yes.
My gut instinct is to go with Yoda.
Mm.
I think he'd be a lot of fun behind a bar, right?
Yeah.
Like can dispense advice.
Yes, very sage-like wisdom.
Right. Is it Woody Harrelson in Cheers? Is he the bartender?
Yes.
Yeah, I feel like he could be a Woody Harrelson. Which now makes me think we should just pick Woody Harrelson.
I was going to say, you have that option now.
Right. Well, gosh. I feel like I have to do that now. So, well, I'll finish what I was saying, because the reason I don't want to pick Yoda is with our discovery of Yoda's refusal to let R2 into his home, I don't want another droid racist bartender in Star Wars.
Hey, I already have the racist bartender for my my counselor.
Right. I feel like we can't call ourselves we serve droids if we put a droid racist behind the bar, though. So I'm going to have to stick with Harrelson. Chris, can you remind me of that character's name?
Oh.
Beckett.
Yes, let's go with that.
All right.
I want to say, did I just call him, just ignore his name and just call him Woody Harrelson during the solo review? I think I did that.
Yeah, I don't know that we said Beckett more than once or twice. But I'm sticking Beckett in an honorary cheers position behind the bar.
Where everybody knows your name.
Chris, who would you like in your Guinan position of 10 forward bartender?
I feel like I've got a good candidate. He could, you know, dispense some advice, but I'm assuming he has equally good skills with actually mixing drinks, so I'm going to have to go with old Lando for ship's bartender.
Ooh, man. All right. Lando is off the board.
I apologize.
No, I mean, he was going to come off pretty soon, I feel like, given the positions left. So, yeah. So, we will turn back to the random number generator for the final pick of today's contribution to Crossing the Streams. And it keeps giving me bartender and over again. All right. You're one of my favorite characters in Next Generation, the Worf position of Chief Security Officer.
Mmm, that's a good one.
Or your Tasha Yar for all those Season 1 fans out there. So I guess that has circled around and put me up front, right?
Yes, sir.
All right. Well, Chewie is off the board, who I think would make a nice Worf-like kind of character, right?
Yeah, maybe pulled the trigger too soon on Chewie.
I'd love to see Chewie with a Batleth.
The ultimate killing machine.
Oh, I know what to do. So if there's one thing that Star Trek fans know about Worf, it's that he's always standing at the control and, like, lightning courses through his body, right? Like, he's standing there and, like, sparks always jump out of the computer and like, hurl Worf to the ground.
Yeah.
So, who in Star Wars is better at getting a lightning course through him than Darth Vader in Return of the Jedi? So, I'm going to stack Darth Vader just on the off chance that those lightning sparks come after him.
Oh, that's a solid pick.
So, Chris, who are you going to staff at the old Worf position of the Enterprise?
For security officer, I'm going to go with maybe kind of an obscure pick, but remember the guy in A New Hope and the Death Star when they are bringing Chewie up to the prison block?
Do you mean, where are you taking this thing?
That guy clearly has his protocols and procedures down.
I wasn't notified. I'll have to clear it.
So I feel like he'd make a good security officer. He brings that snarky wit that I'm really looking for. And I guess to further back to your point, I won't feel bad when he inevitably gets shocked and his console explodes and throws him halfway across the bridge.
That's a great pick. I like that deep cut. Well, Chris, with that, you want to jump into A New Hope?
Absolutely.
Look, sir.
What have we here?
Look, sir.
Oh, what a mess.
With the blast shield down, I can't even see.
Look, sir.
These aren't the droids you're looking for.
Well, Chris, I guess I should remind our viewers that, like when we watched Return of the Jedi, we both watched the despecialized edition of A New Hope. And it struck me that, of course, like when I was very young growing up, you know, before the special edition came out, that's what I watched. But I don't think I had ever watched the non-special edition in widescreen format before.
Oh, good point. I guess I'm in the same boat, actually, come to think of it.
I always watched the pan and scan, you know, formatted for your TV screen version as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, I don't know if you were in this boat, Chris, but I remember when I went to go see the special edition in theaters, how much it surprised me that you could actually read the scrolling text. I was used to it only being like readable when it got like halfway like across the universe.
Having to get, you know, right up against the screen there. I was just going to ask how you felt about, I guess, the scrolling text now after Rogue One. This is really the first time I've kind of gone back and, I guess, with a critical eye towards Episode 4 since I've seen Rogue One, really. You know, I guess Rogue One in a lot of ways is just, is effect, the plot of it is just kind of what they described in the scrolling text.
I would have never guessed that things would have gone the way they did in Rogue One, but I think it fits.
I think we'll run into this maybe a little bit later in other stuff we see in, like, Ben Gibbs about Vader that, yeah, anyway, we can all dig into that later if we want to.
I think you make a really great point in that if it creates any discontinuities, it's not nearly as much as the ones that exist from what, you know, Ben says about Anakin.
Yeah, I mean, everything, it fits together, just, you know, don't look too closely at the joins there. They're not super tight.
Right. The arms may have been pulled off by a Wookiee, but the joints have been sewn back together. Like your TK421s, yes, of the world. So, our podcast, like the movie, will pan down screen to the rebel ship, the Tantive IV, being pursued by the Star Destroyer. You know, we go sort of on board the Tantive IV, and we're introduced to 3PO, to R2-D2, and to the pointlessness yet prevalence of helmets and armor in this universe.
I feel like the Rebels may have, you know, the more realistic view, maybe. They just have some, I'm sure, you know, Rebel OSHA-mandated safety helmets that they have to wear and some safety vest, but that's about it.
Right. The helmets don't actually obscure your vision, at least.
Yeah.
They are big on vests. I haven't seen this many vests outside of, like, a middle school safety patrol locker.
The vest gives an air of authority that, you know, really makes those stormtroopers take notice.
Right. The ship's a little too warm for a jacket, but... So I think rewatching this, I think it's sort of a testament to how good the set design is of the rest of the movie, that I kind of forget how cool the Tantive IV set actually is.
Yeah, it's so iconic that, going back to Rogue One again, I'm sorry. You know, just the moment they that door closes and the lights come on the ship, like you immediately know where you are. I completely agree. It's very cool. Very cool, almost timeless design.
Mm-hmm. It makes sense, just, you know, going back to 1977 and thinking, like, in this first 5 minutes, you know, you just really want the wow factor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you want spaceships, you want lasers, you want Darth Vader, you want all this inside of just a couple minutes.
No mean feat.
Do you ever forget that Darth Vader had, like, the matte finish on his helmet in A New Hope?
Yeah, I kind of do.
Like, you always picture it being shiny, but in this movie it's got the scuffy matte finish.
Yeah, he's more of a working man's Vader in this movie. He's, you know, like, this isn't his dress helmet. This is his gotta get stuff done helmet.
Right. He's not that businessman you see getting his shoes polished at the airport.
Yeah.
I've always, like, felt a little jealous of people who do that. Like, what are they doing with their life that they've gotta stop and get their shoes shined at the airport?
I think it's called business expenses or an expense account.
I love, like, how frivolous you could come up with things to charge to that account. Another kind of fun thing about this scene, just watching it now, is the scene where Vader chokes the rebel officer.
Yeah.
I didn't notice it before, but it's a lot of, like, clever cutting where you never see his whole body off the ground.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you just see him, like, that's close up on him and Vader's face, and then you just see, like, some dangling legs.
Yeah.
But I mean, those could be either just like fake legs or him just like hanging from a pole or something. So it's fun to get, like, in addition to all the expensive effects, just some old fashioned like camera cutting work too.
Yeah.
To make it look like Vader's strong enough to pick this guy up with one arm.
Just something else, silly. I don't know if I just never noticed this or just noticed it this time. Like, as the guy's, like, you know, windpipe's collapsing, Vader just keeps questioning him before throwing him against the wall.
Yeah, I forgot to bring in a good cop for this Q&A. I can see why Tarkin was not, you know, confident in Vader's interrogation techniques. If, like, the tapes of this one got, like, kicked down to internal relations or internal affairs, yeah. Sorry.
I think Vader screams to bring him, like, you know, the passengers alive. I was like, man, you just choke that guy. If anyone needs to be told that, I think it's you. Something else I just kind of noticed after they pop off in the escape pod, you get that quick mm-hmm. shot over to the those two Imperial gunners. They say, there goes another one. I never really fully considered the implications of that statement.
They're just picking them off.
Yeah. Like, man, how many... I understand what they're there to do, but like, how many escape pods full of people have they just been murdering?
Fish in a barrel, my friend.
Enough that he's like so tired of doing it that he doesn't want to shoot one more.
As a life form, he's only interested in this for the kills. He's he's got like some hash marks next to his gun of I don't pull the trigger for at least two bodies.
Those little like pillbox hat says born to kill. Yeah, those guys crack me up. And also, if word gets out, it could generate sympathy for the rebellion in the Senate guy. I never noticed, like, that guy blinks about as little as the Ewoks in the non-Blu-ray Return of the Jedi.
Maybe this is just me. Those officers he's dealing with initially, like, they seem a little, maybe too familiar.
Oh, like willing to talk back and stuff?
Yeah, like, you know, this could generate, like, you know, sympathy in their Senate. And the guy comes out and, like, just very bluntly tells Vader that, you know, they finished searching the ship and blah, blah, blah. They don't seem to be cowering before him and expecting to die at any moment.
You know what it is? It's the matte finish.
It's true. This is not a serious Vader.
Right. He can't even, like, he doesn't even have permission to use the company visa for his shoe shines. You don't have to worry about him.
Yeah. This is not middle management Vader. This is blue collar Vader.
But those guys also, they are pretty terrible. The generate sympathy in the Senate guy who never blinks, every scene where he's not talking, you can just like, kind of look at him, and he's just always thinking, like, I don't know if the camera's on me or not. I don't know if the camera's on me or not. He has that, like, I've mentioned this about, like, someone else in the, some other, like, character actors, but he has that, like, sort of, like, sudden realization that you're being taped, and it's just, like, I don't know how to walk anymore. Like, do people bend their knees when they walk? I don't remember.
Where do I put my hands?
Right? I'm excited to see his hands just, like, slowly rise up out of frame. Look, Mom, I'm acting. Luckily, you know, born to kill officer didn't shoot down our favorite droids, and they land on the desert planet. And I guess one thing I'd like to know is, I mean, I guess 1,000 people have asked this question, but why does anyone live on a desert planet when you have, like, spaceships?
Yeah, excellent question.
My sort of, like, headcanon is that this is maybe, like, a post-climate change planet.
So the folks are just stuck there who couldn't scrape up the funds to leave?
It's like the frog and the boiling water kind of thing.
Ah, I see.
You immediately have a desert planet, you leave, but it just over the years becomes a desert planet, and before you know it, you're moisture farming on the dunes with Uncle Owen.
Yeah. Wondering how it ever got this bad. Buying sketchy droids from Jawas, and your big Friday night's going into Tashi Station to pick up some power converters.
If you're playing the a New Hope bingo card game. You can now scratch off Tashi Station to pick up power converters.
You can waste time with your friends when your chores are done.
Yeah, I also wonder, with it being a desert planet, the sort of obvious allusion is to Dune.
Yeah. I thought about making the Dune joke about, you know, why they're still on the desert planet, but anyway.
Right. Yeah. Maybe even there's like a skeleton of a sandworm that C-3PO passes by.
I wrote that down. I don't remember that at all.
Like, oh, the dragon?
Yeah, like the Dune snake skeleton. Yeah, I don't remember that.
Oh, I love that thing. Yeah, that's great.
I just,
with everything else going on, you forget about it.
Yeah, it's just one of those background details that I just completely forgot about or just took for granted.
Could be another casualty of the formatted to fit your TV screen.
True, possibly.
I mean, it would be in there, but you'd get less of it.
Yeah, I might just have thought it was some rocks or something in the background.
So, I mean, there's the desert planet that's the obvious allusion to Dune, but there's also the, like, random throwaway mentions of spice.
The spice must flow.
Yeah, the spice mines of Kessel or something like that. I think through a few mentions, yeah.
And later Luke has the, you know, my father didn't fight in any wars. He was a pilot on a spice freighter.
Oh, yeah. Interesting.
And so, you know, I mean, did the spice have geriatric properties? I don't It's just funny that it comes up subtly a few times in A New Hope and then vanishes like a thousand voices crying and then suddenly silenced.
Maybe Frank Herbert sent them a cease and desist.
Right. But yeah, I mean, is it supposed to be a drug or is it just like paprika? I don't know what exactly they're describing.
Maybe that's what goes into death sticks.
You want to buy some death sticks?
I've got another death stick joke in a second. Go ahead and wait with bated breath for that one.
I don't think anyone has death sticks on their A New Hope bingo card. So, R2 and 3PO have a sort of pointless splitting up adventure where they're both picked up by the Jawas. You know, R2 gets, you know, speaking of Worf lightning earlier, R2 gets shot up with some lightning by the Jawa, doesn't he?
Yeah, kind of a lightning sort of blunderbuss or something that Jawa has.
Kind of wonder if all the Jawas are just little tiny mini Siths. They've got lightning, they've got cloaks, yeah. They got red eyes.
Yeah, I mean, this is all making sense. This could explain a lot.
Yeah. Tired Darth Jar Jar, wired Darth Jawa. Get our favorite droids reunited on the Sandcrawler, which is just another great great set design. Cool from the exterior, cool from the interior.
Get our first shot at some, I think, the old Gonk droid in the background. And that kind of creepy, bug-eyed looking protocol droid. And of course, everyone's favorite, Clown Bot.
Yeah, you get a couple Clown Bots in this movie.
Yeah, in the Sandcrawler, there's like an armless one, like kind of writhing up against a wall.
Yeah, you can't, you know, he's wanting to do the Sig Heil, like the one in Return of the Jedi, but just can't.
That's why they had to take his arms off.
They're grossly offended.
No one's going to buy that thing.
The Sandcrawler, full of junk and droids, you know, eventually pulls up to the old Lars homestead, and all the droids, you know, shamble about to get purchased. I wanted to like kind of pause on this moment, so I've sent you a picture of, you know, all the droids are kind of lined up outside of the Sandcrawler. I don't know if you have that in front of you now.
Here, yep, I've got it up. The usual droid suspects.
Yeah, it is kind of a usual suspects like lineup here. I guess the red droid R5, that's gotta be your Kaiser Soze, right? He's the verbal Kent of the group.
Yes.
His bad motivator is all just a front.
Yes. The greatest trick the devil ever pulled, Scott.
Uncle Owen looks behind him and the words bad and motivator are like up on the bulletin board. Yeah, so in this lineup, I'm going to go through the droids and then ask you what you think these droids could possibly be useful for. So, we all know R5, the bad motivator, so I'll start on the far right, and it looks like we have a sort of, like, black hemisphere with, like, a periscope on top.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like a black hemisphere on a pallet with, like, rolling pins for wheels. So I call this the Chrysler Hemibot. And then, of course, you know, R5 and R2. Mm-hmm. And then we get one that I've mentioned before, I think in the droids episode. It's that droid with all the arms.
Yeah.
So he has like 8 slender arms, 8 slender hands, all tethered to his body with joints and wires. I like to call him Edward Slender Hands. Chrysler Hemibot. We got Edward Slender Hands. And then over there next to Uncle Owen, you've got a sort of Dalek looking droid.
Yeah, it's, you can't really get like a good look at it. I'm not sure if it has feet or if it rolls.
Or it's got maybe like kind of Robbie the Robot kind of feet.
Yeah.
And like a black, it almost looks like the thing that like John Glenn would come back to Earth in and would land in the ocean. His head looks like that thing.
Yeah.
With a like 30-foot CB radio attached to it. And that thing coming out of the right of it? What is that?
I don't know. It looks like, I mean, it just looks like someone, you know, super glued some, like, some black flex tubing to it or something like that.
I thought it was a little bazooka coming out of it there.
Ah, that's a good thought.
Which I like, the idea that they're packing some bazooka Jobots. Next to Bazooka Jobot, we got one that I definitely had never noticed before. It's this tiny little guy. It looks like a little, like, mini R2 box. Like, mini R2 on a box.
Yeah, on another smaller pallet.
Yeah. I just like to call him Itty Bitty D2. You know how, like, R2 has, like, a little person, like Kenny Baker inside of him?
Yeah.
It makes me wonder if there's, like, a gerbil inside of this. Just itty bitty D2.
Just on a wheel.
Right. It's really squeaky. Its head dome looks kind of like one of those little things you buy, like a lamp that turns your kid's room into a planetarium.
Oh, yeah.
So, Chris, now that we've described these to the listeners, what on earth is the Dodge Hemibot? What could you imagine that it exists for?
I have no idea. My top theory right now is it's something the Jawas assembled out of scrap to make the other droids look better. or maybe that's the one with the giant antenna on it. I'm not sure.
It's very like season one BattleBots from like 20 yes, years ago.
Yes, excellent. Yes, that's perfect.
Like, maybe it has a little forklift that kind of flips the other one over and doesn't do like anything else.
Yeah, it's rounded, so it's hard to get at it, hard to use your bot flamethrower or whatever on it.
My only theory is this thing is some, like, landmine removal droid, but it's not, like, one that finds the mine and deactivates it. You're just, like, content with this thing blowing up.
It's just an expendable droid.
Right. It is the canary in the coal mine for any, like, undeactivated landmines on Tatooine. Or maybe your Sarlacc pits.
Yeah.
It's just big and wheels in front of you and can fall down the Sarlacc pit if there's one out there. It could, like, cap it, right?
Yeah, there we go.
The hemisphere, it falls and it caps the pit.
Yeah, it's a Sarlacc pit capper. I like that.
Now I'm beginning to think that Owen should have bought the Dodge Hemibot. So we've discovered that one. What about Edward Slenderhands? What do you think that nightmarish octopus-like droid is for?
The hands don't seem to be able to... They only seem to be able just to move in and out.
Right.
So, I don't know. Maybe it's just like a tool holder. Like, you know, if you're working on, you know, the old moisture evaporator... it can, you know, maybe whir around and hand you different stuff.
It's that hand that Ewan McGregor was, like, trying to sell in Big Fish. Did I make that up? Was he trying to sell, like, a little, like, robot hand?
I think so. That sounds right.
There's some movie where someone's trying to sell a robot hand. We'll say it's Big Fish. But it's, like, not connected to a robot. It's just a...
Yeah.
You can, like, make it hold a hammer for you, like you're saying.
Yeah.
This is eight times better than that Big Fish robot hand.
Yeah, it's a bunch of those, you know, like those grabber like things that, you know, senior citizens have. It's just a bunch of those on a single platform with some basic sentience built in just to grab stuff and hold stuff.
It's a finglonger.
Yes.
Oh, a man can dream, though. A man can dream.
What about the Bazooka Joe bot? With the CB radio on top.
Now I want to think that's like a, maybe like a long range kill bot or something like that. It's got the radio for that, you know, those extra long targets we need to send it in harm's way. Very stealthy, as you can see. No one will ever see that coming.
All the, inconspicuousness of, the droid that shoot the robot that shoots up the conference room in RoboCop.
Oh yeah, the Ed 209.
Yes, this is just a long range Ed 209.
Alternatively, maybe it is actually an old rocket or an old, like, you know, Mercury rocket you can use to escape Tatooine.
What about the itty bitty D2?
I think that one's just a vacuum cleaner. That's my first guess.
Yeah, it screams Roomba.
Yeah, it's just a standard vacuum cleaner or something like that.
I have no need for a
8-pound Auric XL.
I feel like these Jawas are really lucky they picked up R2 and 3PO. Because, I mean, just they get to the Lars homestead one day too soon, and they've got a bad motivator and these other, like, crummy droids.
Yeah.
And the Sandcrawler, it looks like it has pretty expensive upkeep, given that it's enormous.
Hey, what do you think? What do you suppose the Sandcrawler runs on?
Gerbils.
Gerbils.
The ones inside the itty bitty D2s, they all just went on a giant wheel.
You better have those units from the soft lanes repaired by midday, or it'll be hell to pay.
So, I don't know, everything else to say about the droid, the purchase of the droids, or the Tashi station to pick up some power converters?
My theory was that, you know, maybe, you know, Tashi station was, it's just where he says he's going. He goes to Tashi station a lot to pick up power converters. My question for you is, do you think Luke's on death sticks?
You want to buy some death sticks?
I think he must be.
I mean, you live with your aunt and uncle, delayed another year going to the academy, barren desert as far as the eye can see. You can only bullseye some womp rats in your T-16 so many days a week before it starts getting old.
I regret when we talked about the escape pod guy not saying he's shooting those escape pods like so many womp rats in your T-16. We let that joke fly by like a escape pod full of droids. Yeah, no, I really love this theory because Luke is very upset about not getting to pick up his power converters.
Yeah.
And I don't know what a power converter is, but I can't imagine that it warrants that kind of tension, you know.
Yes. It's about day 5 since his last power converter, and he's feeling the itch.
He's this power converter, and it zooms in on his eye like in Requiem for a Dream. His eye dilates real fast. Oh, I'd love that. Owen's like, yeah, someone keeps stealing all of her droids and selling them to the pawn shop. I can't figure out who.
Yeah,
guess we'll go buy some new droids.
I bought the same droid from these Jawas like 5 times now. There's no telling how many times he's bought that R5 and just now decides to break.
The motivator was still good the first time he bought it. Maybe that's why he wants the crummier looking one. He knows that it must be less likely to get hawked by Luke for death stick money.
He can't get anything too nice. He'll just still come along and steal it.
You know, also in these scenes, you know, we're getting introduced to all the characters and getting introduced to a lot of the great music, too. You know, we get that very kind of lighthearted introduction to Luke's theme when Aunt Beru calls out to him.
Great music overall. Maybe tying this vaguely to some, at least maybe more recent news. I think episode 9 is supposed to be the last movie John Williams is scoring. That's going to be, it's going to be sad.
Yeah, it's really amazing what he's done with this series. It will be interesting to play it like a major symphony, just to listen to all the soundtracks sort of throughout a day. It would be really fun once they're all done. You know, we move along from here. What comes next?
Let's see. Go inside. C-3PO gets his creepy oil bath. Get the hologram and all that. I like how you have this very sort of grainy hologram. And Luke's like, she's beautiful. It's like, yeah. Like, man, he's really hurting for any kind of female interaction out there in the middle of the desert.
It's like almost like a hey man, I don't actually get Cinemax, but a little bit's still coming through.
that's what Luke's dealing with here. And then, you know, the widescreen bits, you know, you can kind of see more stuff that I'm guessing just missed previously. Like I never really noticed, like, you know, the kind of land speeder off the side in one shot when he's in like the garage. And you've got, like, in, like, the back of, like, the T-16 and, like, a walkway, mm-hmm. like, right there behind mm-hmm. it. Yeah, just some more, you know, minor details that I just completely missed.
Yeah, it's really fun, and it's really seamless in trying to know, like, what's a physical prop versus what's a matte painting. Mm-hmm. I have no idea. It's a cool little garage, I guess it's Luke's garage.
Yeah, Luke's garage. There's our sort of Sanford and Son. Spinoff sitcom.
So Luke stupidly removes the restraining bolt from R2-D2 and goes off to see Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru.
I guess is here when you want to introduce the old drink. It's about blue milk time.
A medium dry martini, lemon peel, shaken, not stirred.
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 3 measures of Gordon's, 1 of vodka, 1/2 a measure of quinoa lily. Shake it over rice and then add a thin slice of lemon peel.
Yes, sir.
I think anyone who's followed this recurring bit could have guessed that when we got to A New Hope that we had to make our own spin on Aunt Beru's blue milk. So my first thought, Chris, was to do something with a white Russian in honor of the dude.
The dude abides.
Yeah, because, you know, he wears a robe. Obi-Wan Kenobi wears a robe.
Yeah, man, it really tied the room together.
I guess Obi-Wan is really the dude of Tatooine in a lot of respects, come to think of it.
That crazy old wizard.
Yeah, well, that's just like your opinion, man.
Who do you think is the Big Lebowski Jesus to Obi-Wan's dude?
Oh, man. Ugh. Take your pick from the cantina, I suppose.
I was going to say contenders are the cantina bartender.
Yeah.
The spy guy who, like, turns them in.
Mm-hmm. That's a good one.
The stormtrooper who pops up and says, "Look, sir, droids." Like, that's the Donnie.
You're out of your element.
Right. Look, sir, droids. You're out of your element. Which, by the way, are two droids just, like, leak parts? Yeah. Is this like a Hansel and Gretel situation?
Yeah, just dropping breadcrumbs to get back to the escape pod.
No wonder they can't keep a motivator from going bad. They're like leaking O-rings all over the desert.
It's that harsh sand. It's coarse and rough and gets everywhere.
I don't like sand.
So anyway, I did not do the White Russian because I thought we'd do something with blueberries and I just wasn't feeling like that was going to mix with the coffee liqueur.
Mm, good call.
In a good way.
Yeah, good call, I think.
So instead, we went smoothie which I'd almost been holding off. I mean, we can still do another smoothie, but almost been holding off of it to make a Lando-inspired you old smoothie.
Oh, that's fantastic. Oh, that's a great idea.
So, coming to a bar guide in the future, it's a Lando-inspired you old smoothie.
Oh, man, I'm looking forward to that already.
Chris will spend months perfecting that drink. What we have here is, I made way too much of it, so I'm going to, in my head, cut this recipe in half. Is you want to take like a half a cup of frozen blueberries, about a half a cup of milk, maybe a little less, you know, maybe an ounce and a half of vodka, 3/4 ounce Bailey's, and a teaspoon of sugar, and some crushed ice, and like a half a banana. And so you want to put the blueberries, the milk, the vodka, the Baileys all in. Then you want to kind of put enough crushed ice to sort of cover that. Then add the banana and sugar and blend it. I think that what would be like a fun way to use this drink is, you know, you could make that, you could, you know, scale it up to as much or as little as you want. Let that be your base. And say you're going to have like a group of people watching A New Hope together. You could have a bunch of other, like, smoothie ingredients. You know, strawberries, raspberries, other kind of juices or stuff you could add. Lemon juice, orange juice. And you kind of have the base, and then people can kind of add whatever they want to their particular beverage. I think it would be kind of a fun way to have a sort of A New Hope watch party. It's a nice drink, and also, a lot of our listeners have kids. And this is a drink where you could cut out the alcohol and add maybe a little bit more sugar and some chocolate syrup instead of the vodka and Baileys, and you know, make it more kid friendly as well.
Oh yeah, that'd be great.
The fun name for this one is the Blue Beru, in honor of Aunt Beru's blue milk.
Yeah, I've got one as well. I'm really enjoying mine.
I mean, we're drinking it here. In the dead of winter, but we're watching a movie that takes place in a desert, so
yeah, it's great for those hot Tatooine days.
It's at least thematically appropriate, if not seasonally appropriate, right now.
Hey, they wanna wonga, they wanna wonga, they wanna wonga.
Do you wanna let go?
But Luke goes to skulk outside in what, for my money, is the most iconic scene of the whole movie.
Yeah.
And that's the setting suns with the Obi-Wan's Force theme in full blast behind him.
Great scene.
We basically cut, you know, skipping over a little bit of stuff here. We get to Luke the next morning chasing after the now lost R2-D2. We get the sort of, I guess, the last scene with a living Owen and Beru, right?
Yeah, yeah, just in the kitchen. Oh, if there's droids aren't out in, I forgot exactly.
South Range or something.
Yeah, exactly. They'll be hell to pay. Well, there will indeed be hell to pay in a little bit, but unfortunately.
We'll see you in hell.
I like how Beru is putting food into her food processor with all the care that Doc Brown puts garbage into the Mr. Fusion.
Even looks vaguely similar. You just need the need the Mr. Fusion attachment on top.
I kept waiting for her to like empty a soda into her food processor and then drop the can in. I guess Luke finds R2-D2 and decides to get out and take a look. And he sees a Bantha, right? Which is a I think more evidence for my climate change theory.
Yeah.
That you've got like woolly mammoths on this desert planet.
Oh, yeah. Excellent point.
I don't think Banthas evolve on Tatooine unless it was previously a lush planet.
Oh, excellent point. Excellent point.
Then you get the sand people again with Luke looking through the binoculars. And this is another scene that when I was a kid watching the format had to fit your TV screen. You never actually see the sand person.
You just see the, almost like a jump cut to the,
mm-hmm. To the one jumping up in front, yeah. And raising and lowering the stick.
I always wondered, like, man, just 3PO was just right there and said nothing. Like, you know, Luke's looking through the binoculars. So he can't see him. You can see, like, the sand person approaching from the front, you know.
Yeah. I'm not very good at telling stories. You know, stories like, look out, there's a sand person in front of you. That sand person's lucky he didn't step on a Han Solo twig. When the guy does jump up, doesn't C-3PO just, like, fall backwards?
Yeah, just immediately just falls over backwards. He's like one of those fainting goats. He just seizes up and falls over.
I've got a case of the vapors, Master Luke. Yeah, I love like what a drama queen 3PO is in this movie. Yes. Just you know, when they first approach, 3PO has this like you're lucky Master Luke doesn't blast you into a thousand pieces. And then he faints, and then when they get up, he just says like, you know, go on without me, I'm done for, or something like that. Are we led to believe that, like, Luke just gets, like, bludgeoned in the head?
I think so. I mean, we don't see it. You see him dodge a couple, and then...
Then he's passed out.
Yeah, they just kind of drag in an unconscious Luke.
Right.
I don't think he's the fainting type either, so I'm assuming he got a, you know, took one to the head.
Yeah, that or the death stick withdrawals peaked at the worst possible time. He's actually just shivering on the floor. It's a desert, but it's so cold.
And sand's all over me.
But yeah, so Obi-Wan uses his sound effect machine to scare off the sand people.
I know, right? That's why, even as a kid, I was like, what's going on here?
Yeah, they have a Chewbacca level sensitivity to loud noises. Yeah. Hey, Chris, I've just like randomly paused. There's some like cave paintings in this canyon.
Yeah, I know. I'm assuming this was, I think they filmed most of these desert scenes in Tunisia, but I'm not sure if this was actually filmed there or not.
Looks like it.
But yeah, it's, I don't know if they did those for this or they just happened upon that. But yeah, that was one thing I kind of noticed too. Like when you kind of see them, the sand people kind of scurry off.
In the background, there's some like squares and stuff.
So I don't know if this is, I mean, I assume this is where Luke parked. So I don't know. Maybe he comes out here to, I don't know.
This is a death stick spot.
Yeah, to express himself and, you know, when he's on death sticks.
Here's a smaller square. Here's a larger square. There's not much to the cave paintings.
Yeah. I'm sure on death sticks, they're amazing.
I thought maybe they were like Obi-Wan's, like counting down the days he's lived in Tatooine in isolation.
Yeah.
It's like the cave where Tom Hanks like pulls his tooth out.
Obi-Wan has like a rock he's drawn a face on back there.
Yeah. So we cut from here to Obi-Wan's hut, which again has some like kind of like random crap on the walls. Like it appears like they're like knives or I'm not sure what.
Yeah, just kind of a random hodgepodge of, I don't know, maybe stuff they picked up in the bazaar or something like that. I always kind of wonder what old Obi-Wan was, you know, been up to in all this time here on Tatooine.
Yeah, so, you know, that's been a sort of topic of debate is whether or not, like, an Obi-Wan movie would be something worth doing or not. Do you have any kind of opinion on that?
I mean, doesn't sound like the worst idea in the world. And he's certainly a popular enough character. I guess it would certainly depend on, you know, what their sort of broader ground rules are for what he can and can't do here without interfering too much with Tatooine.
I mean, obviously I would watch it. I mean, I make a Star Wars podcast, but it doesn't, like, excite me as the most interesting idea for a movie. But, I mean, I'm more than happy to be proven wrong.
Yeah, I mean, I'm assuming they'd have to limit it just to the setting, just to Tatooine. You know, arguably one of the most fleshed out places in Star Wars.
Right. Yeah. Right. You want to see something new. It's him going on a hunt to research the cave paintings. He's got a whole Indiana Jones quest.
There we go. It's just a thinly veiled Indiana Jones Star Wars crossover with Ewan McGregor.
He finds the crystal skull that's in Paul Bettany's office in Solo. Why is he going by Ben Kenobi?
I don't know. I mean, I can't imagine, you know, he's that well known as Obi-Wan. I mean, possibly, maybe, I don't know. I'm not sure how much acclaim, you know, Jedi's had, but
right.
I guess it would make sense just on a basic level just to at least change your name, but I don't feel like he did the best job of it.
Right, I was gonna say, isn't this like half done? It's like worse than not at all.
So yes, Ben, perfect.
Should we change the last name?
Nah.
For privacy's sake, let's call her Lisa S. No, that's too obvious. Let's say L. Simpson.
That's why I don't want a Kenobi movie, is I don't want the dumb scene where he gets his name. And he checks into, like, the customs office of Tatooine. And the agent's like, what's your name? And he's like, well, I've been Kenobi, but now Ben Kenobi it is.
Oh, I can see that scene in my head, and it's horrible.
I like the idea of the sort of, like, warrior monks.
Mm-hmm.
The Jedi really seem to, like, the sort of, like, living in the desert.
Yeah.
Where you're not quite sure if he's hiding or just, like, yeah, the desert's just the kind of place that Jedi live. Mm-hmm. Like, old, like, you know, like, 5th century, like, monks in Egypt kind of thing.
Yeah, sort of a simple existence.
So I guess we get our cut to, is this the first shot of the Death Star now?
We see the Star Destroyer approaching, so we, like, immediately have a sense of scale here. And just watch as it just gets smaller and smaller and smaller approaching it.
Mm-hmm.
And we have some of our favorite characters assembled around the conference table.
Yeah, and we've mentioned this conference room many times before. You know, it's almost like a mix between Thunderball, Villain Lair,
Spectre.
yeah, your Spectre conference room, but this, they actually have the table, meets maybe like the Legion of Doom from Super Friends, meets, I had one more, but I forget what else I was thinking it was kind of like.
Dr. Strangelove?
Yes, that was it. The big board room in Dr. Strangelove.
You can't force choke him in here.
This is the war room!
So there's these little things in front of all the people at the meeting. Are those travel mugs?
Yeah, they look like kind of stainless steel tumblers or something. Maybe.
Yeah. Or is the idea that they're like recording devices and they're like, you know, being recorded like a la the Council of 13 from the Guild of Calamitous Intent?
I think I like that idea better than them just, you know, having beverages. Emperor's Finest ground coffee or something like that in front of them. Or the Imperial Reserve Select coffee.
All this audio is just getting recorded and then dumped on, like, whatever the new version of Scarif is. It's like kind of like in the Supreme Court. You can, like, record audio, but you can't, like, take video of the Supreme Court deliberations.
Off screen, there's an Imperial sketch artist just...
He's coloring the guy getting choked by Darth Vader.
Yeah, more Vader disrespect. I think this is where Vader decides to go and polish his helmet.
Yeah, he's had enough here.
Yeah.
He's thinking the next airport I go through, I'm paying the $10. I'm going to write in the tip and I'm going to turn in the receipt. So, you know, now we cut back to Tatooine and... The trigger happy guy who's been gunning down escape pods is apparently just really taking it to a bunch of Jawas. Yeah. And Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru.
Only Imperial stormtroopers are so precise, apparently.
That's the line that even like is more false from a certain point of view than the like Darth Vader killed Anakin. I think if we operated in even more poor taste than we usually do, our Beru-themed drink would have been one that you, like, set on fire.
the flaming Beru.
Maybe we can come up with one for the website.
The Flaming Lars or something like that.
Right. You know, now that Luke's death stick stash has been put to the torch by Imperial Stormtroopers, he doesn't really have anything to stay around Tatooine for, and is happy to follow old Obi-Wan on some damn fool idealistic crusade.
Something I may have just forgotten about or just not realized it, but the when Luke goes back to the Sandcrawler, you have this shot of 3PO
picking up the corpses. Yeah,
like throwing another Jawa on the fire.
Let's put another shrimp on the barbie.
So this spawned this whole other crazy theory about, you know, maybe 3PO and R2 having, you know, some sort of grudge now against Jawas for their for their kidnapping earlier. Like, right. I like to think Ben didn't ask them to do this. They just took it upon themselves to burn the bodies.
They're animals, and I slaughter them like animals. Jawas are their sand people.
Yes.
I had a similar kind of wonder. I mean, part of me, like, imagined them having, as they're cleaning up the dead Jawas, having the, like, Samuel Jackson, John Travolta conversation from Pulp Fiction, like, cleaning up the brains in the car. Like, R2-D2 be like, why am I on brain duty? And R2 looks like he's, like, roasting marshmallows over there.
He's enjoying it a little too much.
Right. Put a restraining bolt on me, will ya? he's the Milton from Office Space.
I'll set the Jawas on fire.
burned his old state crawler down. I was told I could keep my own restraining bolt. I wish my Milton didn't sound more like Buffalo Bill from Silence of the Lambs. Was she that big fat Jawa?
Would you restrain me? I'd restrain me. I'd restrain me.
It puts the bolt on its body. It does it whenever it's told.
I just think we hit maximum war.
Took a little bit longer than usual. But we got there. Let's just get out of this Jawa burial ground and head to Mos Eisley.
Oh, muy, muy, I love you.
I
love you.
I
When you get like the Mos Eisley reveal, the trumpet fanfare, did you just find it very underwhelming?
Yes. You'll never find a more wretched hive of scum and villainy. Burr, 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 burr. And it's like just like a tumbleweed.
Like, I know this is probably a bustling metropolis by Tatooine standards.
Like, oh, we really pulled in on a Sunday morning or something. I love how we also get, like, recycled shots of all the droids from the Sandcrawler.
Oh, yeah. Of course.
The clown bot, Gonk, the bazooka Joe bot. Yeah. So, we go from there to the cantina.
Oh, I hate to bring us back to this, but one more log for my conspiracy fire. When they pull up, you get a throwaway line from 3PO saying, like, I can't abide those Jawas, disgusting creatures.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm convinced. R2's just, like, imagining the fire growing larger.
You do a slow zoom in on his little eye, and you just see flames.
I was told I could play music on Tuesdays. And why does it still sound like Buffalo Bill?
I just want to see the Office remade, or I'm sorry, Office Space remade. The guy who was Buffalo Bill playing Milton.
Right. He's down in the furnace room just like dancing. Yeah, I think, again, the other fun thing about watching the despecialized edition is I've sort of forgotten now what's been touched up and what hasn't over the years. And it's amazing just how great this cantina scene looks.
Yeah.
You could see this in a movie today, and it'd be great science fiction.
Yeah, I think that you probably lost a lot of these characters, and you know, or had them been CGI'd over. But yeah, I'm really a fan of the OG cantina.
You got any favorites?
I like the werewolf with the red eyes. He even like you see him briefly, and then he gets like his own you know close up, like where he puts down a drink. That's a solid one. I like the guy, like, in, like, the full flight suit and helmet with, like, the visor still on down, like, indoors.
Yeah, that guy cracks me up. It's almost like everyone was assigned to make a costume for a science fiction movie, and he showed up like, I thought we were doing, like, a science fiction movie. Yeah.
Why does everyone look like they're here from, you know, Frankenstein versus the werewolf?
Right. Hello, you wear a spacesuit when you're on another planet, you morons. No, I love that. It's very, like, cosmonaut inspired. Yeah. No, that guy is definitely one of my, like, two or three favorites. And I love the hammerhead.
Yes.
The Ithorian for the nerds out there.
Nice.
I think that's just such a great looking costume. It's such a cool design for an alien.
I like the Lucifer. Lucifer's there. I almost forgot about him. just the actual devil. He's just
right.
But I mean, yeah, I mean, just that. I mean, like you don't even get the full horns in one of the shots, and he looks so good. Like he's very. It's just exactly the kind of character I expect to see in this kind of hive of scum and villainy.
Yeah, they really could have, you know, from that cannon top cut straight to here, and we wouldn't have had the sad trombone music going into Ghost Town, Mos Eisley.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, you can just pause this anytime, and it's great.
Yeah. I know it's low-hanging fruit, and we've said it before, but I still don't love the butt on Pondababa's face.
Yeah. Yeah, it could have been, I feel like you could have just picked someone else in the background to fill in for that, you know, his role.
You think he's got to use a straw?
I hope he uses a straw. I don't want to use that glass. I'm not saying the bartender doesn't keep a clean shop, but I don't think any amount of cleaning is gonna, you know, get that glass back to an acceptable level of, you know, sanitization for my liking.
Yeah, I mean, is that big contraption, like, is that the dishwasher? What's exactly, like, going on behind the bar?
I don't know. It's the galaxy's most complicated espresso maker, maybe? I have no idea.
Yeah.
It's for making, I don't know, pan-galactic gargle blasters, whatever that drink from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy was.
Oh, yeah.
It looks like, you know, He went crazy in the Williams-Sonoma catalog back there and just kind of got everything.
The Rube Goldberg espresso and... So, another question about, you know, we've got Pondababa and we've got our favorite medical yes. officer, Dr. Evazan.
spoiler alert for crossing the streams whenever we get to that position.
Right. I was trying to figure out... His face, is he supposed to be an alien? Is like a Star Trek alien, you know?
Yeah, where they just kind of, oh, you know, you're a bipedal humanoid, but we're just going to put some stuff right on your face.
Right, just plaster some putty around your nose and called an alien. Or is he just a guy with a messed up face?
I don't know. Like the other half of his face that you really don't get to see seems like it's normal, you know?
Oh, a Harvey Dent situation.
Yeah, maybe. Like maybe he's got some, he's someone's archenemy out there in the galaxy.
Maybe in 12 different places.
He has 12 different versions of, you know, some kind of Batman.
I was wondering, so you know how the backstory is he invented the half heads.
Yes.
That you see in Solo.
Oh, you think he was maybe, you know, maybe patient zero for...
Yeah, like a Dr. Jekyll kind of
thing. Yeah, okay. I can see that.
He was halving his own head and it went wrong.
Yeah, I could see that. I like that idea.
What a great environment. I think that my biggest hope for the Star Wars expansion to Disney World is just getting to drink in the cantina.
Oh, man. Yes.
That's really all I want.
I feel like I need to go find out what all they're planning to do with that now. I need that. I need that to happen.
So, you know, we've had the kerfuffle with Ponda Baba and Dr. Evazan. We're introduced to Chewbacca, and then we get Kenobi and Luke, you know, approaching Han and saying that they're looking for passage to the Alderaan system. But Han points to the bumper sticker that says, "Gas, ass, or grass." It says, "Nobody rides for free, baby."
Luke's fresh out of Death Sticks.
And who up on to Peppa gets on board. And it ain't with gas or grass. So, any thoughts about the introduction to Han Solo here?
I guess I always forget just how late in the movie, you know, we actually are before we get Han Solo. We're like a little over 45 minutes in at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Man, they did such a good job of, you know, like him making an impression that, I mean, by the time he leaves the cantina, you know, he feels like a very familiar character.
Definitely. It's great to get him and Alec Guinness in a scene together. Because while we've had some good sort of individual acting moments, I thought this is the first time in the movie where you get two really good actors in a room together and they can play off each other in a way that gets you like more reaction shots than an Imperial officer not knowing how to blink. You know, Harrison Ford's always kind of like laughing or kind of like kind of moving his fingers together and Kenobi's sort of like a skeptical side eye. Even the Chewbacca costume does better acting than a lot of the characters we've had so far.
I think we mentioned this maybe in the Solo review. I like the, you know, maybe the slight peek behind the curtain of, you know, the Han's personality facade we see after he's tells Chewie about, you know, those guys must be desperate. Get back to the ship and get her ready. He's, you know, a little excited.
Yeah, playing it cool in front and then being like, he would have taken the deal for way less money.
Mm.
It's like Mrs. Maisel's dad getting the job offer at Bell Labs.
Yes, excellent reference. Just gotta play coy.
Like, oh, I wasn't really going to the Alderaan system.
I suppose I could. I mean.
So then we get the scene with Greedo coming in, and I love this angle of Han where he's got his boot on the table and the camera shooting right at Han. I remember one time seeing an interview with John Travolta talking about Pulp Fiction, and he talked about how much, I mean, it's funny to like act like John Travolta is some sort of like masterclass in acting, but he talked about putting a lot of time into thinking about how Vincent would walk. That he has a sort of like druggy kind of walked shuffle to him. That's not like desperate, but also not normal.
Yeah.
And I feel like, you know, Harrison Ford, whether it's studied or second nature, like he just uses his posture in a way that not a lot of actors are able to do so. That he can convey things about the character with his posture.
Yes. I completely agree. And it was almost, you know, necessary, really, for as little time as we have with, you know, Han for, you know, introductions before we're, you know, out of the cantina and back into the mix.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you always wonder about those, like, nearby universes where, like, Burt Reynolds plays Han Solo. Like, it's just so hard to imagine it. And maybe it would have been great. I don't know. It's so hard to imagine it working. Without Ford.
Yeah, I don't feel like you'd have, you know, anywhere near the, you know, affinity for the character if, you know, it wasn't someone else in that role. And I know it's hard to think of, you know, anyone else in that role, but Ford did such a great job with the limited screen time he had there.
So we get the wasting of Greedo, and then we've got some stormtroopers are kind of scouring the city for the droids. And I love the stormtrooper. Oh, so R2-D2 and C-3PO are hiding behind a door.
Yeah.
And the stormtrooper just knocks on the door and it says, oh, no one's here. Move on to the next house. Like, it must be like 5 minutes to lunch break or something.
So yeah, no getting through this door, guys. I've tapped lightly on the door. It's locked. Didn't wait for a reply. It's just locked. We're moving on to the next one.
Right, the same troopers that, you know, murdered a whole city of Jawas are like, well, I don't want to force open a door.
Locked door. I mean, let's not get ahead of ourselves here.
Right. But I like this scene. Yeah, they're kind of throwaway scenes that you don't necessarily remember. But I like these scenes of R2 and 3PO hiding and some Imperial informant sort of tattling on them. It gives... So I'm kind of stealing this from a war movie podcast called Friendly Fire. They had a Star Wars episode, and one of the people there compared Mos Eisley to Casablanca. To the city Casablanca in the movie Casablanca.
That's fantastic. I completely agree with that in a lot of ways.
Yeah, it was a comparison I wish I had thought of before, but this sort of almost legal Netherlands, like, you're not quite sure who's in control.
Mm.
So you're going to have, you know, Nazis walking around and Free France and Vichy France and Americans and everybody goes to Rick's kind of situation. And so, you know, the cantina is almost the sort of Rick's Cafe American. Mm. Of Mos Eisley, where, you know, anyone but a droid can...
Yeah.
Nazis are fine, but droids. No droids. I don't know what that does for clown bots.
Yeah. Even down to the architecture, too. It's, you know, somewhat reminiscent of, you know, something like North Africa or, you know, somewhere along those lines.
Sure. Sure. Or Santa Fe. But people aren't trying to, like, sell you artwork and power crystals.
These are Kyber crystals, Scott.
That's true. They are kind of into crystals in Star Wars. Mm.
That's an excellent comparison. Damn them for thinking it up.
Right. You know, you get a great introduction to the Millennium Falcon, get them boarding and jumping out. You got anything there?
I don't know if it's maybe just hard for me to tell what's a good and bad spaceship. Like, it looks a little dirty, but I feel like maybe Luke's maybe on too high of a horse there, calling it a piece of junk.
So, yeah, they get a fun shoot out of there. I love the way that there's just so many. I mean, this could have been 10 hours long if we talked about every cool camera movement. But I love when they shoot off into hyperspace, the camera starts to rotate, like, after the ship leaves. I don't know, something about it, it's,
yeah,
you know, it's not a Hitchcock zoom, but it has a similar kind of feel to it, where it makes you feel like, whoa, they just went into hyperspace, the screen is rotating.
It's just the starfield too, actually, like, the ship doesn't rotate, which, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's even better effect.
Yeah, and again, it's pretty simple, but it has a sort of, like, it works at an emotional, you know, level of, like, it messes with your sense of balance almost in a way that you think, yeah, jumping into light speed ought to throw you off balance. Yeah. And it's not necessarily that it ought to look like this, but it feels like this. And that's just, there's so many times in this movie where something like that is the case. And for all the crap that George Lucas takes as a director, there is just so much he gets right in this movie with little stuff like that.
Yeah, looking at it now, it wouldn't feel right if it wasn't rotating. If it was just like a static shot of just the Falcon getting smaller, just going away. Yeah.
Yeah, which for any movie before this one, it would have been that.
Mm. Absolutely.
For every, like, cheesy wipe to the next scene, you get something that's really cool like this.
It's so natural. I never really looked at it that way until you mentioned it.
Where are you taking this?
Ultimate power in the universe.
Where are you taking this?
Sad devotion to that ancient religion.
Where are you taking this thing?
So you want to maybe go out with the Planet of Alderaan? Let that be the last scene we talk about.
We can go out along with the Planet of Alderaan.
Right.
Sounds good.
So now we get Peter Cushing being the good cop, worst cop. I'm not sure what kind of cop Peter Cushing is. But again, like I said previously about Harrison Ford, this scene where Cushing tries to get the rebel base location out of Leia, I mean, he is so good at it.
Yes. I'd feel bad if they ever tried to... I'd feel bad for whoever would try to, you know, come in. Like, I don't know if they were considering anyone else but Cushing for this role, but I couldn't imagine anyone else, like, even approaching, you know, his performance in this.
I grow tired of asking this, so it'll be the last time.
One thing I couldn't tell... So does she sincerely think the rebel base... No, she doesn't. She doesn't think it's on Dantooine.
No, I think she was...
Because she's got a note, because she knows how to get to Yavin later.
She lied. She lied to us.
Yeah, I think she's maybe hoping for plausible deniability when they show up and they're gone. They're like, oh, they must have moved when they found out you got me, or maybe something along those lines.
Mm-hmm. That's a big gamble, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I don't... Maybe she was hoping to call his bluff, you know, hoping he wouldn't take out an entire planet, or, you know, at least, or give him something else to blow up, maybe.
Right, right, or buy for time. But sadly, that all doesn't work, and Grand Moff Tarkin is very happy to blow up the camera for a full demonstration of the battle station. So any, like, stray thoughts of the part of the movie that we've covered so far?
It was really nice just to go back and, you know, watching it from maybe a less, you know, wanting to be entertained standpoint, more of a critical standpoint, just kind of watching it. I, you know, noticed a lot of things I'd never seen before, and which I would have thought impossible, really, given as many times as I've seen this movie. But I want to thank again the makers of the Despecialized Edition too for... I know the special editions are, you know, very, what's the word?
Polarizing?
Yes, let's go with that. I think it's important to have at least the option to watch, you know, the original trilogy in the best format possible.
It's a good world where both exist, is my opinion.
Yes, I don't feel like either one should be, you know, wiped from the earth completely.
Right, neither should be thrown into the Sarlacc. I like, I guess a couple things that maybe kind of almost go without saying at this point. I love the way this movie begins in medias res, with a whole political structure behind it, with like a religious structure behind it. I think it just does such a great job with that, with the little stuff to talking about the dissolution of the Senate. You know, it has this very like ancient Rome kind of feel that there's a monarch with a sort of puppet senate that still exists, to all the stuff with the Jedi. I just think it is so cool. And then all the stuff that everyone knows about with all the Joseph Campbell archetype stuff, hero's journey kind of stuff, with all the little throwaway things to add to that, like C-3PO kind of jokingly saying, "I see Sir Luke," setting Luke up as like a knight. There's just so many small throwaway things like that I don't feel like it's worth going into all of them, but it's just worth saying how great it all is.
Yeah, we don't see a lot of the wider universe in this movie. It's, you know, pretty narrow in what we actually get to see, but it does definitely feel like it's part of a well-structured larger universe.
Mm-hmm. I'll say more about this when we do the next half of the movie, but I just think it really works better being a smaller movie in a larger world.
Yes.
That Obi-Wan line we haven't gotten to yet about you've taken your first step into a larger world, you know, watching this movie feels like that. Like, again, this movie just would not be made today for a million reasons. But we would have some dumb post-credit scene where the Emperor says, "Well, too bad I have another Death Star."
There'd be about like five like scenes like before, during, and after the credits. You know, just teasing everything else. Yeah.
Yeah, imagining this as like a Marvel Cinematic Universe movie is like a very painful thing to imagine. He said, pissing off half the people who like Star Wars. Yeah.
I mean, I think we talked some like about that some in like in the Solo review where we got the, you know, sort of the mall sequence there, but it's a line they haven't crossed yet, and I'm hoping it's, you know, written into their sort of Ten Commandments of Star Wars movies that, you know, should not be done.
Chris, did you, on this watch through, find a recipient for the coveted fur jacket award?
I live for furs. I worship furs.
Gold jacket, green jacket, who gives it?
Oh, please, won't you see my vest?
I think I did.
Let me just remind our viewers or any newcomers that the fur jacket is given to the most conspicuous character or someone doing something very conspicuous in honor of our favorite character, the fur coat guy that we discovered in The Force Awakens.
So, I'm still not sure how I feel about this, but I couldn't give it to anyone in particular in the cantina scene, I felt like. So, and I'm guessing what I think is a first, I've got to give it to, which I'm assuming is probably technically a different character, but when just after Luke sells the speeder, they're kind of him and Obi-Wan are walking away. They walk right by a fully bipedal and moving, but not Hitler saluting clown bot, and it's he's just moving in such like a way that he's so hard not to miss. Like his head is. I think his head makes probably about 50 distinct motions in like the the 5 or 6 seconds that he's on screen. He's looking up, down, left, right, and all around. He's just he's so distracting in a very short scene.
This clown bot is racking up fur jackets like Tiger Woods is racking up green jackets in the early 2000s. Yeah, he's peeled off four in very quick succession.
I feel like he's still haunts my dreams, but
yeah, no, I wondered. I was like, well, Chris can't give it to the clown bot in the Sandcrawler because he already did that.
Yeah,
but there is a second equally not as scary. He's not like half obscured by shadow.
No. I feel like he's just out in daylight looking for his next victim, maybe, or...
The way that R2-D2 and 3PO feel about Jawas is the way that this clown bot feels about the innocence of a child.
Yeah. Oh.
I've got a time code for you to go to, Chris.
All right. I can't wait.
You can get to around 2040, 20 minutes, 40 seconds. This is shortly after 3PO has had his oil bath. Then an observation that is now very conspicuous, and I kind of ruins this scene for me for all time.
I think.
So, Luke is kind of like fidgeting with R2-D2, I guess trying to clean the dust off of him or something. It's right before Leia's projection appears. And 3PO is just there in the background.
Man.
And he's got a towel. And he's just standing there in the background, polishing his crotch with the towel.
The light, like the way it's hitting the like is, I think, is giving the impression maybe that there's some depth there that there isn't.
Some big willow vines.
Yes.
I was kind of getting like a Alex DeLarge codpiece kind of feel from it.
I mean, I can't really say I've inspected 3PO's crotch with any great detail, but this at least from what I'm seeing here, doesn't really look right, maybe?
Yeah, it's a Clockwork Orange codpiece. Wow. He's polishing there, it looks like. So that's unsettling once you notice. Like, again, I'm not sure if Anthony Daniels, if you just couldn't, like, maybe he can't bend his head and see what he's actually doing with his arm.
I don't think he can in that get up.
Maybe he's like, oh, yeah, I'm polishing my stomach right now, but boy, does that not work out right.
Yeah, I think his arms, too, were, like, almost locked in the angle they're in, too, so that's probably the only thing he could polish.
So, for C-3PO literally polishing one off, I have to give him the fur jacket.
Oh, I'm never going to be able to watch this movie again and not see that.
So for any, you know, listeners who were upset about our extended discussion of Chewbacca's dad last month, I apologize for having to go back down this path again. Well, Chris, if you remember last month, we had our Secret Santa game, and I still have a few names here in the Bowl of Destiny, and I thought that it being the new year, we could maybe pull a couple out and try to figure out what New Year's resolutions these characters might be making.
I like it.
All right. I am reaching into the Bowl of Destiny. I'm polishing it off, and I am pulling out Vice Admiral Holdo. Speaking of polarizing.
Yeah.
I mean, the low-hanging fruit is a new hairdo.
Yeah, I was trying to avoid that. I'll say maybe attending a conference on leadership or, you know, like team building or something along those lines.
Yep, just whittling down our listeners even more from any Holdo fans. Any holdovers.
Oh, I like that. There we go.
That should be the name for people who like Vice Admiral Holdo. They should be hashtag holdovers.
Hashtag holdovers.
Sorry to offend the hashtag holdovers. Yeah, I think that, yeah, some kind of resolution to be more of a team player. more forthcoming. Not necessarily to, it didn't have to be to Poe, but just to someone.
Anyone. Anyone, even.
Anyone at all. All right. I am back in the Bowl of Fate, and I have the Emperor. New Year's resolution for the Emperor. I think next year he's going to execute Order 67. I don't know what that is, but he's going to finally get around to it.
It's more funny hats for the dignitaries he travels with.
Right. All right, Chris. I'm reaching back into the Bowl of Destiny, and I've got Kylo Ren. New Year's resolution.
Maybe some lower waisted pants, you know, something more fashionable.
No, to work out even more. That's what
there
he's
you
gonna
go.
Do.
Yeah, you gotta.
Everyone works out for their New Year's resolution. He's obviously already, you know, it's like the thing to say is your resolution when you already do it. Like the really buff guy was like, "Yeah, I'm just gonna go to the gym more. I'm just gonna hike my pants up high and sit around with no shirt even more."
Yeah. Maybe that's it. Maybe he's been skipping leg day a lot. That's why he's wearing the high-waisted pants.
Him and Jabba are going to hit up leg day. And Jabba's all arms.
It'll be leg day buddies.
All right. I've got General Grievous. I think the only New Year's resolution for him is to give up a pack of cigarettes a day.
Cut it down to one carton a day.
Yeah.
And of course, more lightsabers for his collection.
Right. Less death sticks, more lightsabers in 2019 for General Grievous. All right, Chris. Padme Amidala. I'm going to say, you know, another behind working out. It's like, this year, I'm going to more me time. Like, I'm not going to jump into a relationship with someone who might murder children. You know, when I see the signs, like them murdering sand people children, I'm going to act on those this year. You're
going to stop and reevaluate that relationship.
Right.
Let's see. My suggestion for her would be better health insurance.
Yeah. Her in-network doctors.
Yeah.
Not so just great.
Terrible.
All right. We'll do one more. It is Luke Skywalker.
I feel like it might be too easy, but, you know, maybe kicking his death stick habit.
Nice. I was going to say cross-referencing, cross-listing his Ancestry.com with his Match.com accounts. Not smooching any more sisters. That's what he's going to do in 2019.
I like that one.
Well, Chris, it's been no better way for me to ring in the new year than spinning it here, chatting with you on We Serve Droids.
Likewise. I should ring in every new year. we're of course, doing this live.
Right. Well, like every episode, I want to thank Computer Music All-Stars for some of the music that we use. I want to tell our listeners that they can contact us at weservedroids@gmail.com. And you can find us on Twitter at weservedroids. You can go to weservedroids.com, which now exists. And, I mean, it's just got our episodes and also some of the drinks we have up so far, and maybe some more content coming soon. Of course, you know, we have a... If you're stumbling upon us for the first or second time, there's a backlog of great episodes. You know, we don't necessarily talk about, like, new rumors or that kind of stuff, so it's a fun back library of episodes. And I'd like to ask people to give us a good rating and review on whatever podcast listening service you use, but especially iTunes. It can really help us out a lot if you could give us a rating and a review. And obviously the most important thing you could do to help us out is to tell a friend about the show. Chris, I hate to break you from your death stick break. Did I leave anything out?
No, I think that was it. I guess we'll talk to you next month about the second half of A New Hope.
That'd be great. I'll see you then, Chris.
Sounds good. Talk to you then.
Sorry, I was just watching the scene of Stevie holding the Jawa. It's like he's about to dump the job on the fire. That's what distracts him, and he turns around, but all the while holding the dead Jawa. Like, dude, you gotta put that thing down.
The kind of refreshment you get from a cool dip on a hot day. That's what you taste in
Death Sticks.
The most refreshing cigarette you can buy. Because only
Death Sticks
combines the soothing coolness of menthol, a refreshing hint of mint, and the world's finest tobaccos.
You guys look like... What do they look like, Jimmy?
Dorks. They look like a couple of dorks.